inspection in LA. So on the inspection side, I think that speaks to prevention, which is incredibly important. 100% of the targeted vessels are inspected. You might ask, how do they target them? Because that's the key question. Is the targeting system right? And it's a pretty complicated targeting system. But that could be explained after the hearing if you're interested in that. But the inspections are done on vessels coming in.
But according to Ted Marr, they're not surprise inspections. And the preceding sentence to the quote, which I didn't read, refers to OSPR's authority to conduct surprise annual inspections on the shippers and the cleanup companies.
So that's a different type of inspection is what I'm getting at. That's a notification. That's an oil spill notification, I'm guessing. That's an oil spill notification and exercises the drills for the response component, not the typical vessel inspection, which looks at how the vessel set up and operates.
Last word, Mr. Chabot.
I strongly, strongly urge the legislature and this committee not to chase the wrong rabbit. I think it's logical and appropriate that you grill OSPR, that you grill the responders, that you look at what happened, that you ask the questions about emergency drills and the spending, the $18 million. But I promise you, if you do all those things, you've probably hit 5% of the possible solutions. I think that in any emergency, things can go wrong, and you will find areas that went wrong here and need improvement. But you're missing the much bigger rabbit, the much bigger picture. And I would argue to you that the problem in California right now is that you have a system that the incentives and the laws and the policy and the regulations don't work. They don't encourage and guarantee the fastest response necessary. MSRC pointed out that in the first 6 hours, yes, they had equipment to meet the existing standard of a worst case spill. But if you go to Ocean Conservancy's website, just oceanconservancy.org, we took the oil spill trajectory model of NOAA and we animated it. And we show the spill and where it was in San Francisco Bay on a Google map at hours 1, 2, 6, and 22. In hours 1 and 2, the oil, according to the best available technology, the best model, was still a glob circulating south of the Bay Bridge. By hour 6, the spill was flushing in and out of the Golden Gate Bridge. So all the king's horses and all the king's men and all the stuff, it was too late. By hour 6, game over, you lost. The bay was toast. So, you know, I think that you can consider that here's one. Two possible solutions to consider. Number one is still you need to have an independent committee that's made up of experts in navigation, communication, emergency response, look at these complexities. But consider this. If the cargo shipping industry within San Francisco Bay, frankly, has an excellent safety record. The number of collisions are few and far between. But since every cargo ship carries its fuel at the waterline, any collision or elision, as they call it when it's just the single thing, or grounding, has a very high potential for leaking oil into the bay. Maybe you should consider modifying the rules so that any time there is a collision or an elision, there's an automatic requirement for boom to be deployed down current from where a potential spill was. Maybe 5 times out of 6, there isn't a spill and the boom has been deployed unnecessarily. But if you wait for the report to come in, for the report to be measured, by the time you get the boom there, it's too late. You might also consider what needs to be done for trying to provide some incentives or investing some of that $18 million in R&D to move the technology up from the 1960s to the current century. You're in the dark ages right now in containment. Get it together, find some way of either doing it yourself or providing the incentives to the private sector to give them the incentives or disincentives to improve their technology. Finally, $250,000, if you want to improve your ability to figure out where in the heck the oil is, maybe take $250,000 and put it in the state's requirement for the port system, which is a system of monitors that will improve our ability to be able to track where the oil is. So those are a few suggestions.
Very, very, very helpful. Okay, we're going to conclude. Senator Flores, closing remarks. Thank you very much to the panelists. We appreciate it very much.
Okay. Yes, thank you. First of all, I want to thank Senator Migdon for getting us to put this hearing together. I think, obviously, from my perspective, you know, this is a hearing that we needed to take our time on, Mr. Chairman. I would thank you as well. This was not a rush job in the last couple of days or days after the spill. I can tell you that I'm a bit disheartened, however. I think there's been an incredible amount of lack of information in terms of what we've received here. I think it's somewhat indicative of who's really in charge. I don't think we have a very clear picture. I think, in fact, if the private contractor had decided to come today, which they should have, we probably would have gotten the best available information necessary for us to continue.
As opposed to the best available technology.
Yes, and of course they've declined to appear, Mr. Chair. We of course reserve the right to bring them back, obviously at some point in time when these reports are concluded, to get better information. I would say that the concern or the comments seem to transcend, at least from the administration, that this response was done by the book. However, I think we need a new book. I don't necessarily think that the book is working here. I don't think the response times are, the standards are adequate enough. I don't think that even with the governor's declaration of emergency, that we used all the powers necessary in that through the Disaster Act to cut through the bureaucracy and allow folks, particularly in the bay that we've been talking about, the ability to protect their own shores. And I think that was something that we needed to continue to focus on. I can tell you that even after an emergency declaration, I'm still concerned that how we're responding even today in terms of the reimbursement issues. And there is an analogy to fires. Quite frankly, we have learned through that, as you've mentioned, the issues of mutual aid, the issues of debris cleanup, those types of mutual discussions have been helpful. We've learned because we've had a lot of them. In this case, we don't have very many spills, so I think we ought to come to the table with the expectation that things didn't go as well as they should have, and how do we start to correct that? And lastly, I think we need to reset performance standards, as you said, Mr. Chairman. I think the old quote, if you set your standards low enough, you'll always be a success. That seems to somehow apply here, that we point to success because the standards at this point in time are so low that we're not necessarily going to make sure that this is success for the Bay Area, period. I think there's been some very good suggestions made today. I've got at least a couple of pages of them for us to come back in a couple of weeks in January. I look forward to working with you on some legislation, some cleanup legislation. And I would urge the administration to simply put together an independent commission to give the oversight committees in this particular building the ability to get the best information and the most accurate and, more importantly, the most independent. And I do want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Senator Flores. I should ask, is there any public testimony beyond the exhaustive testimony we've heard for the last 5+ hours? If not, then let me close quickly. I want to thank Senator Migden as well for helping us get organized, and you too, Senator Flores, for your always diligent work. Senator Yee, Assemblymember Huffman, the staff, incredible staff, especially my staff member Marie Lou, all the staff did a great job. Thank you to everyone who participated. Boy, it's you're left with a lot of unanswered questions here, and I suppose the investigations that will continue will give some of the answers. But I'm left with these thoughts: private-public partnerships are generally good things, right? We encourage that, and yet you can't escape the fire department or the police department analogy that when it comes to essential elements of public safety or public health or public welfare, that the ultimate responsibility relies with representative government, and that only representative government is really responsible to the people. And a lot of people have been harmed, or a lot of, and so in that light, when I think about the way the labor is divided here, and as Mr. Chabot talked about a few minutes ago, the incentives that underlie some of the activity here, look at the way the system works. The private entity is responsible for self-reporting when there's an incident. The private entity is responsible for estimating the size of the spill. The incident commander, O'Brien, again, you could tell a little frustration on our part, who chose not to come today, doesn't really have relationships with the local government. The cleanup activities are mostly done, again, by private entities. We want to encourage you to continue to do what you have to do to clean up this situation, obviously. But as policymakers, we are even more concerned that we find some silver lining in this whole incident. And if there is a silver lining, it's that we have an opportunity now to learn from the mistakes in this incident, to strengthen our oil spill law, and to consider our possible over-reliance on private industry, or at least ask, what does the government have to do better to oversee the private industry? The comment made by a number of panelists is right on, that prevention is more effective and more important than response. And in that light, we have to look at the budget to make sure that OSPR is properly staffed and funded to do more prevention, to do more technology, to be part of random inspections, whether they occur now or not. I'm still sort of left confused about that one. You know, there's some broader lessons here in terms of the budget debate that we're about to have in California. It's easy to do things on the cheap, but you often pay for it in significant ways in the long run. And when I look at the redirection of 35 positions, when you look at vacant positions that don't go filled, even with the surplus that exists in the fund, it does, I think, provide a warning to all of us as policymakers and the administration to make sure that when we cut or when we don't fund that which should be funded, that we are aware of the consequences, because the rhetoric of cutting is very easy. Cut, cut, cut. But we don't spend quite enough time sometimes thinking about the impact of failing to fund very important public functions. So with that, we will adjourn. I want to thank everybody, and we'll continue our work. Meeting stands in adjournment. Thank you.